This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Jim Gooders.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. Mostly sunny and a high temperature of 87 this afternoon. It's 85 right now at O'Hare, 77 at the lakefront.
It's been a down day on Wall Street. Let's get the latest on the numbers live from Bloomberg and Joan Doniger.
And Jim, it's getting even downer right now. The Dow is down 206 points. The NASDAQ 42, the S&P 19. Those are losses of about a half to almost 1% across the averages. And the Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is also falling 1%. There because of 12% losses both in U.S. Cellular Corporation and Telephone and Data Systems. J.P. Morgan analysts have marked down both equities because in part because they say, what kind of future is there for U.S. cellular in a 5G world? On Wall Street, the issue has been trade, mostly trade, with President Trump's new tariffs of 10% on $200 billion worth of new U.S. goods, including some consumer goods that the administration had been hoping to avoid, things like purses, things like baseball gloves. But also energy is playing a part. Crude oil futures have now slipped below $72 a barrel, so energy shares are taking a hit. They're down 2.25% at $71.86 a barrel. Back to you, Jim and Chris.
Thank you. On today's Noon Business Hour, we're going to be talking about just what exactly is behind the selling on Wall Street today and also the big battle among American companies to buy Britain's Sky.
If you're a first-time investor or you listen to this program and you say, I don't know if I could do this, we'll actually have some tips to help you get started investing. And we're going to hear from a bear. Yep, a bear who's going to talk about what we need to watch out for as we move forward in these markets. It's all ahead on the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
21st Century Fox is up, rather 21st Century Fox up its bid for the European blockbuster Sky. That's coming up in our next segment. The Trump administration has raised the stakes in its trade dispute with China, while today's producer prices data shows the biggest annual increase in over 6 years. And joining us is Peter Morici, professor emeritus at the University of Maryland and syndicated columnist based in College Park. Of course, you can always keep track of what Peter is up to on Twitter at PMorici1. So, Peter, what's going on in terms of the markets and the trade disputes, and it just seems every day we get a new headline and every day we see the markets reacting to those headlines?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, the market is kind of quixotic right now. It goes up for a couple of days, makes good progress, then goes down. It's generally been about 100 points off its January high, and it wants to stay there. But it's volatile. I think part of that is the volatility of Donald Trump and the manner in which the media responds to him. For example, the message he's taking to Europe today about NATO is long overdue. And their reaction so typifies why Americans should be angry, and Donald Trump projects that anger. But, the way the media treats him, it gives rise to a bad day in the market. You put that alongside articles about higher gas prices and, you know, the Wall Street Journal, which the market reads, it's been a constant drumbeat that somehow or other this Trump expansion, economic expansion, is false and it's going to come down on our heads. I mean, they published one bad study after another. For example, yesterday they published one from the San Francisco Fed. I think the toughest thing to find in the San Francisco Fed would be an economist who's not a liberal Democrat. And it kind of colors what they do.
When the president of the United States says Germany is totally controlled by Russia, you're going to have a reaction.
Well, let me put it to you this way. If they turn the gas valve this January, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to German independence? If I ever saw a fool in a skirt, it's Angela Merkel. Between her immigration policy, You know, she's let, since 2015, she's let in immigrants equivalent to 2% of the population. Some villages are unrecognizable just from all the immigrants, unemployed, who don't speak German, loitering in railway stations and parks. And with the Russians doing things like invading the Ukraine, seizing territory, invading Georgia and so forth, is it really smart for Germany to be financing European dependence on Russian natural gas? You ask me that question. Is that smart?
How does this affect the American public and also investors?
Well, it creates great uncertainty about the security of Europe. For example, and I don't think it's given too much weight. I mean, that's kind of the wrong question, but it's given too much weight. But the reality is he's taking a very important message. You know, we have in the past, before Donald Trump warned the Europeans about buying Russian gas, we have in the past, going back to Carter, warned them that they're not spending enough. Here's a good example. And so, you know, Angela Merkel says, well, after the Americans, we put as many troops in the field as anyone. Sure, they're the most populous nation. Over there, none of them are spending very much. And so she's got the most populous nation, so she's got the biggest small army. What's more, because the Germans never participate in combat, you know, when we have these multinational forces in the Middle East and so forth, they're not battle-tested. They have no battle experience. So for Angela Merkel to say that, say, German steel mills don't pose a security risk, you know, to the extent they supply American industry, is silly. You know, the Russians could be in the Rhine in 3 weeks. I mean, we don't know how well the German army will stand up. So there are real security risks in Europe, and the Europeans expect us to protect them. I think it's ludicrous for them to think that we should pick up the tab for protecting them and then not expect them to act responsibly. And signing the deal with Russia on gas, bad decision in that regard.
Peter Morici.
Syrians and others to the point of 2% of the population in 3 years, bad decision. And deflecting remarks when we raise the issue of the resources they commit, bad decision. So he has a right to be angry. He sent letters to European leaders about their spending. Belgium, which spends less than 1%, it spends 0.68% of its GDP on the military, says, oh, it's hard to take these letters seriously.
Peter Morici, the professor emeritus of the University of Maryland and syndicated columnist out of College Park, Maryland. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at PMorici1. 21st Century Fox raises the stakes in its fight for European broadcaster Sky. That coming up on the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
21st Century Fox has upped its bid for Sky, and that raises the stakes in its fight with Comcast over control of the European broadcaster. Joining us, Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the media consultancy firm Verter Group here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Tim, sketch for us what it would mean for 21st Century Fox to have Sky and Comcast to have Sky.
Yeah, Chris, this is actually a story of three companies, Disney being the third. But we'll get to that in a second. But the reality is that this is an asset based in the UK, Sky Television, that is essentially one part programmer and one part distribution system, sort of like the DirecTV with some content channels attached to it of the UK. And it's a very valuable property in terms of programming, in terms of assets, in terms of technology, including sort of future television interactivity kinds of things, set-top boxes and the like. And it is absolutely a toehold, both geographically as well as strategically, for both companies. And Fox and Comcast are in a locked battle. Fox has been after this asset, which they already own 39% of already. Their pursuit, 21st Century Fox's, is to essentially purchase the rest of it that they do not own, the 61%. And that's basically what's up for grabs. And Comcast has been a bidder against 21st Century Fox for Sky for the last couple of months.
What would be the most likely marriage here?
Well, I'd mentioned Disney before because they're sort of also in the mix because, as you know, Disney and Comcast are both locked in a battle to purchase 21st Century Fox outright. So in many respects, this is a very convoluted story, because if Comcast were successful in getting Sky, that would essentially mean that they have a majority ownership of Sky and that asset. However, if Comcast is successful in purchasing Fox, 21st Century Fox, they would get not only the Fox channels and all of that, but they would get the minority stake that Fox owns in Sky. So in many respects, this is really a multivariate level sort of deal, sort of construct here. But the reality is that the future of television sort of hangs in the balance, especially across Europe. And Sky Television is a very prized asset amongst many big media companies.
Tim, very quickly, who really needs most to be the winner here?
Well, that's a great question, Jim. I don't know if there are any sole winners, right? The reality is that the consolidation is going on worldwide, and there are only a number of sort of prime assets that can ensure a success across the global scale. I would argue that Comcast probably needs a little bit more than Fox does, given that Fox has already a pretty established international footprint. This would just be the crown jewel if Fox were to get it.
All right, that's Tim Hanlon, the founder and CEO of the media consultancy firm Vertier Group in Chicago. Still ahead, a check of the markets, and in Personal Finance Wednesday, we'll talk about how to get started with investing.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets, sponsored by Top Grading Snapshot, and here's Joan Doniger.
Well, Chris, the trade war is heating up, and so are Wall Street's losses. The Dow now down 164 points, the NASDAQ 28, the S&P 15. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is down 1%, with U.S. cellular and telephone and data systems leading losses, both down almost 12%. The S&P ended its longest rally in a month after the Trump administration promised more tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods. China promised to retaliate. Trade-sensitive shares are leading the losses. Caterpillar and Boeing are slumping, along with Deere & Company. And federal regulators want to know more about Dish Network's wireless network plans, and they want specifics, such as which network equipment it will use, which frequencies, and what kind of devices it plans to sell. Dish has missed several deadlines to answer these questions, and the company has less than 2 years to use some of its $40 billion worth of airwaves or lose them. Now, let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal. Pete?
Worries of that same trade dispute have grains lower across the board. December corn down 6.5 at 354 and one quarter. November beans are down 20 at 851.5. And September wheat down 16. At 476, all worries about the trade war. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
The Dow down 169 points with business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Welcome back to the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Jim Gooness.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
The markets are down as President Trump makes tariff threats against China.
Personal Finance Wednesday, how to get started with investing.
We'll learn how to be prepared if the markets turn south.
President Trump meets with NATO allies in Brussels.
On the WBBM Market Watch, the Dow's now down 168 points, the S&P 500 down 15, the NASDAQ down 28 points.
Beautiful afternoon, very warm, a high temperature of 87 in the upper 70s at the lake. It's 85 right now at O'Hare and 77 along the lakefront.
WBBM News Time, 12:31, stocks trading down, and joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street in that direction today, Art Hogan, the chief market strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York. So lots of financial news and foreign affairs going on, Art, and that seems to be what's driving the market today.
It sure does, Jim. It's interesting. We had 4 days of relatively positive market action, and that really coincided with the assumption that the news we're going to get on trade was it. We're going to hear Friday the official implementation of the first $34 billion worth of Chinese goods that would receive 25% tariffs. And the market had settled in on that, thinking, this is a busy week. We have an administration that's heading to the NATO meetings, meeting with the UK, meeting with Russia, and trying pretty hard to get their Supreme Court nominee approved. So we thought, you know, trade might get a bit of a rest. And lo and behold, last night after the close, that was the wrong assumption. So markets have to be back in that, you know, ongoing concern about trade policy and what that could mean for earnings in the economy in the back half of this year. And I think that's what we're trying to reflect in markets today. So this is escalation. It's something that had been bantered about for about a month in the White House, but wasn't taken that seriously. And here we are with the contemplation of another $200 million worth of Chinese goods that we're looking to put tariffs on, a 10% tariff this go around. The timing on that, though, is going to get pushed out. So I will tell you this. I think the market tends to have a dynamic reaction when the news is dynamic, and it tends to have a positive reaction when the news is static. And I think that when we come to the realization that, hey, this is September at the earliest, and this may well be, you know, the next step in this process that hopefully gets us to the negotiating table and not something where we escalate even further from here, then the market may, you know, be able to catch a bid. But that's not going to happen today or maybe even, you know, until we start hearing earnings on Friday.
The New York Times pointed out today that the president complains about the trade deficit, mostly in, we're talking about physical things like cars, when in fact the U.S. services sector has a big trade gap and did very well last year.
Chris, that's such a good point. And the problem with looking at just the trade balance between goods is that most developed countries, and the United States is no different, tend to be service-driven economies. And we are the leader in the global service economy. So obviously, we've over the last several decades moved out of manufacturing to a large part as an economy and moved more into services. So if you don't combine both of those things and look at the overall capital flows and just use that goods, the manufactured goods trade balance, then you're always going to be out of whack. And that's, you know, that's just bad policy to be using that as your barometer. So, you know, from the get-go, we're at the wrong place. And arguably, I think trade policy is really targeted against China. And it's more about, you know, to a certain extent, steel and aluminum dumping and IP theft. And if we were able to come around to the fact that that's what we're really trying to attack, and we're not trying to, you know, put tariffs on everybody on the planet, and we really like to get to a better place and fair and open trade with China, then, you know, perhaps we wouldn't be going through the process the way we are. But unfortunately, that's the hand we've been dealt. The current administration thinks it's the best way to get there. And the markets are obviously going to take notice of that. And as we see today, you know, down about 14 handles on the S&P.
Art, how concerned should we be about producer prices, considering that we've had the biggest year-over-year increase in, what, 6 years? And how concerned should we be about producer prices when we're also looking at the possibility of these tariffs and more tariffs?
Well, I think that's, you know, today's report is not shocking. It's not that far outside of consensus. We are starting to see a pickup, and a modicum of inflation is good in, you know, any economy. It's just getting, you know, what kind of inflation we get that's artificial. Now, when you get inflation because demand is outstripping supply, there's an economic benefit to that. When you get inflation because we're actually setting higher prices with tariffs, there is no economic benefit to that. It's actually an economic drag. So what that ends up having is you have inflation, you know, input costs that go up, where there's no pursuant match and on the demand side of things. As a matter of fact, it actually drives demand down. That's why tariffs don't work. At the end of the day, tariffs end up slowing economic activity. Now, if you're using tariff as a negotiation tool to hope to get somebody to a place where you can get to a better place on trade and making trade more open and fair, that's one thing. But if this persists for a period of time, we have, you know, just the real negative impacts of inflation that can, in fact, slow down the economy.
How could China strike back at the U.S.?
Well, so we don't import as much into China as they export to us. So they run out of bullets pretty quickly in this next go round, in terms of, you know, matching us, you know, tit for tat, if you will. And so what the next thing they could do, and there's probably three levels of this, the next thing they could do is start putting boycotts on American goods. And it's an economy that's pretty well controlled. So if the government made that announcement, you know, you'd have a boycott. Second thing is, one of the largest expenditures China has into the United States is tourism. So that, you know, they could put a ban on tourism into the United States. Both those things sound draconian, but when you run out of bullets on goods that are, you know, being imported into your country, you take the next level. And the third, and the nuclear option would be for them to start selling off U.S. treasuries. But I would tell you, over the last month or so, if you look at the data that's come through, they've actually increased their holdings in U.S. treasuries. So I don't think China or the United States really wants an all-out trade war. I don't think that they're contemplating at this juncture to use their holdings in U.S. treasuries as a bargaining chip. I certainly, they've already announced that they're not going to use currency manipulation as a bargaining chip, but you know, the nastier we get, the nastier they're going to get, and at some point in time, somebody's got to blink here.
Art Hogan, the chief market strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York, always great to get your perspective on what's going on. Up next, how to invest your first $1,000.
Discussing your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. Today we're talking about investment advice for beginners. Joining us, Mark Horner is wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management in Oak Brook. And Mark, thanks for joining us today. How do you talk to someone about that first investment and why it should be taken?
Hey, great to be with you, Chris. So the first decision to make is really articulating what the goal is that a person is saving for. So that once that's identified, that's really going to help guide what type of an account a person might consider or an investment. So a general rule of thumb would be if somebody's saving for a goal that's going to happen 3 years or sooner, they really want to think about having access to those investments, and so making sure that they are short-term in nature and they are not exposing their savings to too much risk. Because a time frame of less than 3 years, you just want to be really careful not to reach for return if you need that money for something like a down payment on your first house or buying a first car or maybe if you're starting a family. So time frame is the first element to get clear.
I would think this sounds strange, but when the markets are down, that probably is the best time to start that investing because it only has up to go up.
Yeah, so again, that does deal with time frames. That's certainly true if you've got a shorter time frame in mind. But for longer goals like retirement, or maybe if a person is just starting a family and they're thinking about saving for college, it might be 15 or 20 years off. Really, where the markets are, whether they are up or down, don't have a whole lot to do with it. Going back to 1926, an investor has never lost money over a 20-year period in the stock market. So the longer the time horizon somebody has, it really just doesn't matter where the market is, whether it's up or down.
Mark, I think a lot of young investors think, well, I don't really have enough money to start investing. And we tease this segment by saying how to invest your first $1,000. But even small investments, especially early on, can really make a big difference, can't they?
So that's a great point, Jim, especially with longer-term investments. Getting started is absolutely the key. And actually, $1,000, that's a lot of money to get started with somebody's first investment. In round numbers, just committing to a savings plan, the technical term is dollar cost averaging, and what it just means is systematically saving the same dollar amount in equal increments. Let's say it's $100 a month. If a person starts saving and investing with a dollar amount of that relatively small amount, that could add up to literally millions of dollars by the time that person's ready to retire 30, 40, 45 years into the future. So absolutely, the key is getting started, and $1,000 by no means is that too small to get started with.
In fact, even if it's something like 25, 50 bucks a week to start, anything is better than nothing.
Getting started, that is the number one most important thing to do. Don't obsess about the dollar amount. Get started.
All right. Mark Horner, the wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management in Oak Brook, thanks so much for joining us. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, a bearish case for stocks.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
And Personal Finance Wednesday continues, sponsored by Geiger Wealth.
Well, stocks have had quite a run-up over the past few years, but things can turn south anytime. Joining us with advice on how to protect your portfolio from a downturn, Mike Larson, senior analyst at WeissRatings.com in Jupiter, Florida. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Mike. In fact, yesterday one of our guests was predicting a slowdown or even a recession at the end of next year into 2020. Do you agree with that?
You know, I've definitely gotten a lot more defensive in terms of the advice I've been giving our subscribers and clients and my positioning over the last year. I think that there's a couple major factors that are going on out there that make me more concerned about the market outlook. Obvious things that like the tariff situation and the trade war between us and China and what's going to happen there are important. But to me, there's a lot of other stuff going on out there that's equally important, if not more so. We've got a yield curve, a Treasury yield curve that's the flattest since 2007 and is behaving in a way that it kind of did heading into the market tops back in 2000 and again in 2007. And we're seeing a divergence in the market internals. I mean, you know, everybody talks about these FANG stocks and how a handful of big mega cap tech companies are holding up, and that's true. But if you look behind that, the financials have been weak for multiple months now. Transportation stocks have been weak. Emerging markets have been falling, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20% in some cases. Some of them are already in bear markets. So again, behind the scenes, you've got some weakness in a lot of places that really isn't being talked about, but are multiple reasons why I'm definitely concerned about this market here.
So what do you recommend to investors?
Well, what I've been doing is shifting into more defensive sectors, and within those sectors, much more highly rated names. I mean, at Weiss Ratings, we have a quantitative system that evaluates the fundamental and technical strength of more than 9,000 stocks. So first of all, I'm looking at more conservative sectors, things like utilities, select high income REITs that are in more defensive economic sectors, things like that. So it might be like a WEC, which is a regional utility up there in the Midwest, or EXR, which is a extra space storage, a storage REIT that, you know, is still going to see demand even in a weaker economy. Those are the kinds of names that I think are going to do a lot better than the high risk FANG type names, as well as many of these money losing IPOs that have been coming out recently.
What would you do with the technology?
Sure. I think that if you look in the last month, for example, it's very interesting that the XLU, which is the utilities ETF, is up 8% in the last month, whereas the XLK, the tech ETF, is up about 0.5%. Now, again, that's a big shift from what we've seen over the last year or two, and there's no telling 100% if it will persist. But what I believe we're seeing is a rotation in the market and a change in leadership. So, I mean, if I had to boil it down to simple advice, I'd say things like sell tech and buy conservative utilities as a defensive move here.
Mike, we talked about bulls and bears, but what this really sounds like is just adjusting your portfolio as situations develop. And if you stick too long with one thing, it's probably going to hurt you. So it's not necessarily positive or negative attitude. It's just looking at the market and going, here's what I need to be doing now.
Well, sure. I think that after 9+ years of bull market, a very long economic expansion that was fueled by a lot of easy money from the Fed and other central banks, we're now seeing those central bank positions begin to be unwound. And we're seeing an economy that's very sort of long in the tooth here in terms of its duration and some of the credit market behavior and so on that's going on out there. So that's why I think it just behooves you to be more defensive as an investor, to carry a higher percentage of cash in your portfolio, and to shift some of these holdings around. Take some of the gains on these big winners you've had and reposition into more defensive stocks, because I think the rest of 2018 is going to be a lot rockier than what we got used to over the last few years.
Mike Larson, the senior analyst at WeissRatings.com out of Jupiter, Florida, thanks so much for joining us. You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. Let's take a look at the markets with Joan Doniger.
Chris, the party's over on Wall Street. The averages are running loss to losses of about a half to three quarters of a percent. Right now, the Dow is down 207 points, the NASDAQ 40, the S&P 19. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg, with U.S. cellular and telephones and data systems leading a parade of losses. That includes heavy equipment maker Caterpillar, Boeing, and Deere. And those part of the losses involve trade. The escalation of the trade war with China, the Trump administration releasing a list of $200 billion worth of Chinese goods. For tariffs, China says it will retaliate. The party in the oil markets is over, too. Libya indicates it'll open up its eastern ports to send out more oil. Crude futures are hovering at the $71 a barrel mark. Forbes said it was supposed to be a conference call arranged between Papa John's executives and a media agency to help play exercises for Papa John's founder, John Schnatter, to prevent future public relations missteps. It went wrong. Forbes reports the agency has decided to cut ties with the pizza maker after Schnatter used a racial slur. Papa John's shares are down 2.5%, with business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.